You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show. Be part of the program by calling 877-971-3971.
Here with Mark Howard, as we're both really away this week, but we spend a lot of extra time. I did, and you spend a lot of time too, but I've spent the whole week before this preparing to bring you new shows throughout the week. So
do you get paid overtime?
No. That's okay, though.
Vacation time.
I know a lot of people are doing that. They're out there traveling. And going up to Lake Powell, that's a big one. A lot of people are doing that. I thought that Lake Powell would be, like, practically overflowing. I'm being a little sarcastic here. But I thought that it was going to go up a lot more than it did. I'm not even sure how much it did go up. If you go up there, you see the white line. I haven't been up there in about a year.
Yep.
And that's where the water used to be. And it's just been going down year after year after year. Did it ever go up, or did they I know they were talking about releasing water to simulate floods in the Grand Canyon.
And to refill Mead.
And to refill Mead. Mead was the big one, really, to refill that is what they went to do. Because bodies were literally being exposed.
And you can't have that
vehicles and this and that. And once they find Jimmy Hoffa, it's all over. So what's the conditions up at Lake Powell? Have you been following this much?
Yeah, so I just pulled up the recent historical records, 2018 to 2023. So just in late April, we finally surpassed the level we were at the same time last year. So last year was our lowest ever level.
Yeah, so not good, really.
Right. And so right now, we are doing better than last year, but we're not as good as the year before. But it is starting to uptick quick because you're having the snow melt out of the Rockies.
Yeah, what's left up there, and I'm sure there's still quite a bit. I mean they just stopped snowing at or skiing at Snowball. They did that through the
end of May.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just... That's crazy.
There's a lot of snowpack.
Yeah, they probably still could do it, yeah.
You know, we're having a rapid uptick. It's gone up, you know, call it 35 feet recently.
But they had to release a bunch, though.
Even so, it's still up.
Okay, well, that's good news.
And it's headed for up, but it's still, overall, it is way down.
Yeah, and the lakes and reservoirs throughout northern Arizona are still, Lake Mary upper and lower, all those little lakes up there down Lake Mary Road. I went a few weeks ago to... Mormon Lake, and I hadn't seen that full in forever. I mean, that's maybe since the 90s, maybe 92 or so.
Yeah.
So it's good news.
It's pretty amazing. We had a lot of water.
Yeah, it's good. My corn is growing, and everything's happy there. People are, because we had a cooler spring, I think it was a cooler spring.
Yep.
Things are growing and going good. Okay, we'll see what happens. Now, you know, they recently had the cuts, 13% cuts at Arizona, Nevada, and Arizona, Nevada,
California,
Utah. California, yeah, agreed to like 13% water cuts from the Colorado. The feds used the carrot and stick approach. They said, hey, we'll give you $1 billion in lieu of using that water. So you're not going to use that water. You're going to get money and everyone's going to be happy. But I still think this is just a short term solution because it's grown so much and there's an insatiable need for water especially as the population grows. And I don't know. I think desalinization is probably what we're going to have to wind up doing at some point.
Yeah. And a lot of people say, hey, Arizona is using so much of the Colorado for drinking water. Actually, we don't. Arizona uses it for farming. California, you know, what they do with it is a different story, but you know,
there's a ton of farming in that Central Valley there and all that. Yeah,
everybody down in Phoenix knows about the canals that cut across, you know, Phoenix, Scottsdale, that area. But they're actually going out to water fields, Scottsdale, Phoenix, all these guys. They get their water from underground aquifers. So we're not actually, for the most part, drinking the Colorado.
Yeah,
we're eating it.
Definitely. Yeah, that's true. And the Yuma area is one of it's like the green leafy capital. I was talking about this recently with Angela. In the winter, that's where the country gets, from last I checked, most of their green leaf, like lettuce and things like that, go down there in the winter, and that takes a tremendous amount of water. Mm-hmm. And but that's where it's coming from. So where does it come from next? You know, what do we do? Because we need food.
Yep.
And if you go down to such an important part.
If you go down to Yuma, the Colorado is already very calm, very flat, very shallow.
It doesn't go too much further past that.
No, it doesn't.
I don't even know if it makes it down into Mexico.
No, my little girls can actually stand up in the middle of the river down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we did this last summer. They're out in the middle of the Colorado, and they're 4 and 6 years old.
And yeah, and it's just like, it's a mighty Colorado.
They can
yeah.
stand up in it, you know.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we're going to be checking comments when we get back. So if you get any comments anytime this week, get those in. Don't hesitate to get them in. talkwithjeff@icloud.com. That's talkwithjeff@icloud.com. It's heating up. You probably want to get your HVAC system checked out, or maybe it just checked out, like burnt out, and it's done, and you need to get a new system or get it repaired. I've been able to limp my HVAC unit along pretty well. It's from the 80s, which I think is cool. They don't build them that big anymore. No. This thing's a work of art. Gettles High Desert Mechanical is a family-owned company. Adam and Ted Gettles, they've been servicing HVAC units, heating, cooling. They also do plumbing throughout central and northern Arizona for over 30 years. If you're in the Verde Valley area, Sedona, Flagstaff, even Prescott, Tri-City area, give them a call. Gettles High Desert Mechanical, 928-567-2200. That's Gettles High Desert Mechanical at 928-567-2200. Okay, as Mark and I are traveling a bit and the family's traveling a bit, we're getting you some updates here. And one of the things with all the kind of the picnics and the barbecues and the parades coming up, you know, Flagstaff has one of the best hometown or small town, small city parades, been ranked. I don't know who ranks these things, but, you know, it is a big parade. And it's a pretty cool parade. It's like usually 10 plus thousand people show up and cram into downtown Flagstaff.
Well, the funny thing about Flagstaff is if you live here and you're truly a Flagstaff person, then you've not only been to the parade, but you've been in it once.
Yeah, or more.
Or more.
Yeah, I did my stint in the parades and I've been invited to, you know, go with various groups and do various things over the past several years. And I'm just like, I just want to watch now. Yep. I've been in there and it's fun, you know, but it's like, I just want to watch. But speaking of Flagstaff and flags, you've been doing some research, or you have at least a list that, hey, how you're supposed to handle your flag, how you're supposed to display your flag. And I think this is really important.
Yeah. This comes from the, VA, so it's va.gov, and they got guidelines for display of the flag. And it says the flag should be displayed often. Especially on state holidays, national holidays, special occasions. There's some times when it's to be flown at, you know, half mast.
Okay. Yep.
We fly it these days a lot more at half mast than we should.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's like every time especially in the government buildings, like it's at half mast. It's at half, why? But it's like almost every other day. And you're like, is this more than we should? Explain that. I mean,
okay, so this. Straight from the government website, the flag may be flown at half staff to honor a newly deceased federal or state government official.
Okay.
By order of the president or the governor, respectively.
Okay. Yep.
On Memorial Day, the flag should be flown half staff until noon.
Until noon, okay.
Okay, so not by order of the mayor, not by somebody's whim.
It's just that's until noon. I think it's probably half staff all day.
Yeah, but on Memorial Day. But on other days, you know, it got flown, you know, for COVID deaths, for this death, for this thing, that thing, the other thing. No. It's supposed to be when a government official dies and the president or the governor says
hey, we're flying half-staff in honor of whoever it is. And real quick, when you started flying it on COVID, for COVID deaths, it's like, who don't you fly it for then?
Yeah.
What is the situation where you don't do that? And I want to.
Well, you think about a war. We don't have the flag at half staff during a war when
people are actually dying every day.
No, you keep the flag high and proud and
exactly
out front.
Yeah. And I think we're always doing things. When you do it for one reason or the other, you always expand it. For example, remember when COVID happened and everyone was a hero?
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, there's people that, you know, went above and beyond, some nurses and this and that. Yep. But I think the situation we get into, though, is we start labeling, like, everybody, the broad group, everybody's a hero.
Finisher's medal.
And it's just like, and that gets, what'd you say?
Finisher's medal or participation trophy.
Yeah, it's like, so everybody's a hero all of a sudden. We're flying the flag half staff all the time when it says it shouldn't be done. You're saying it shouldn't be done. As frequently as it is.
Nope.
It goes right down to everybody's got a day, everybody's got a week, everybody's got a month. And what happens is you water this all down when you're trying to accommodate every situation, every, you know, tragic situation it could be.
Here's a classic example, 9/11, planes crash into the World Trade Center. Should you have flown the flags at half mast? Technically, no. You should not have. And you say, well, that's a tragedy. It is. But that's when you fly the flag high and proud and say, hey, we're Americans.
How long did we fly it at half staff? I'm trying to think back. I remember, you know what I do remember with 9/11, that I don't know if it will repeat in American history, but everybody had a flag.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
At the time, I was running a multimedia company. We had some pretty large-scale printers. We were printing up just paper flags. There's probably some standard on there on that. But, you know, people were putting them in their windows, and you would go down a street, American flags everywhere. So, to me, that was standing high and proud, and everybody was doing it. It didn't last long, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
But it was a time where we did come together, and everybody was flying that flag.
Yeah, there's lots of things you shouldn't do with the flag. You should never, like, fold it back like curtains. It should always be unfurled. Mm-hmm. It should never be pushed aside in curtain shape. You should not wear it on athletic clothing.
Oh, that's happening all the time. Even, I bet you I have hats lined up here. Actually, I'm looking at a flag that's probably displayed incorrectly there. But I have hats. They have the flag on them. Uniforms, athletic uniforms and all that.
Yep, it should be official. Yeah. Police uniforms, military uniforms, yes. Athletic uniforms, stuff like that, costumes. no. You know, police officers, firefighters, military personnel, patriotic organization uniforms, but not run-of-the-mill clothing.
Good to know. Yep, I think a lot of people are doing that. And your swimsuit probably shouldn't be a U.S. flag swimsuit.
Right, exactly. Okay. You got your Speedo on. Yeah. U.S. swim team.
I'm right now in Hawaii with my Speedo and pina colada or whatever.
Right, don't have your American flag Speedo.
All right. Luckily, I'm not.
Obviously, you know, this is obvious to us who are older. You don't let the flag touch the ground.
Yeah,
you
always respect it. Sense, yeah.
You never display it with the Union down. The Union being the blue background with the stars on it.
All right.
In other words, you never display your flag upside down unless it's an emergency.
Yeah.
It's a signal of distress saying something is chronically wrong. Come help. So technically, and I saw this recently, I was down in Dewey, driving through Dewey.
I saw that too. There's the one on the hill.
Yep. Upside down flag. And I'm like, technically, I should call 911 because to not render aid when someone is asking for aid is a crime. If someone says, I'm dying, call 911, and you say, no, I won't, you could go to jail for that. All right, well, someone's flying their flag upside down. They're saying, I need aid. Something is wrong. Help me.
It's a sign of distress. I remember this came up. I think I don't remember who it was exactly, but I knew somebody who was, they said they were flying the flag upside down, displaying the flag upside down somewhere. I can't remember.
Jamie
exactly
Wellen, the former councilwoman,
that's who it was. That's who it was. And I remember we made a big deal about that, and I think she was saying that the country's in distress. This was during Trump. So in her mind, the whole country's in distress. Now I see, and I argued against that. I said, don't do that, don't do that. Now I see people, I think even some conservatives who are flying it upside down because they think the country is, and the country is in distress, believe me.
Yeah.
But it's not the appropriate use. And the argument has to hold on the other side. If you're flying it because the country's in distress upside down, because Biden's president, which it is in distress, that's not the proper use of the flag.
That is completely improper use of the flag. You never carry it horizontally, always aloft.
Okay.
So
I think I might need to change that one right there.
Well, that's playing.
Is that okay?
That's
okay,
fine.
We're vertical. Okay there. Okay.
Yeah, but horizontally, like you'd kind of like you'd lay it on top of a casket, that kind of horizontal.
Yeah.
If it's on a casket, that's one thing, but you don't just carry it around like that.
All right.
You know, growing up just in Cub Scouts, they taught us how to fold a flag. I think a lot of people don't know how to do that. Fold it in their triangle.
Yeah, most people don't know how to do that.
You don't use it for holding anything. You don't use it in any kind of utilitarian manner. You know, you don't put your groceries in it and fold it up and carry them home. You know,
On a little stick. Yeah, exactly.
You don't use it for advertising. You don't print it on paper napkins or boxes or anything else that gets thrown away.
I printed it on paper after 9/11, but I thought that was an urgent situation. We were trying to get those flags out there. So I don't know.
For temporary use. And this always bothers me about the 4th of July parades because they give out the little tiny, call them disposable flags. And I don't really like that. I'd rather.
You're getting very picky in your old age.
But I try to have a lot of respect.
Nowadays, though, I think, though, with the way especially young kids are, if we can show them that patriotism, and if you are in a parade and they're waving that little temporary flag, I'm going to have to disagree with you and say that that's a good thing. Just tell them to. How do you properly dispose of
the patriotism? Is The patriotism is good.
Yeah, and teaching them that. We recently talked about how Brittany Griner, who got in, you know,
got arrested in Russia,
and was sitting there, and she never stood for the flag at the for the national anthem, never stood for the national anthem prior to that, and now she is.
Yeah.
And I think that goes to show you how great this country still is, even though it is in distress.
Something I learned, and I always knew, you know, you take off your hat when you're saying the Pledge of Allegiance or when the flag's passing by. And I always thought you put your hat over your heart. Not correct. You put your hat over your shoulder so that your hand is over your heart.
Oh, okay. I could see that. So you're holding the hat like this, and you got the hat there, and you got your
Hand should be over your shoulder, and your hat, therefore, would be over your...
Just took my hat and put it on the side with, like, my left hand and did this.
Yeah.
Either way, I've always done...
What you want to end up with is the hand over the heart.
Yeah, that's the important thing. But definitely take your hat off.
Yep.
Even though your hair might be a disaster, or you may have no hair.
Yeah.
you definitely want to take that off,
you know, I've got
men
good,
and women.
Good military friend. He might even be listening today. My good friend Dwayne Witt, who is a sergeant major in the Marine Corps. And, wow, he would just bust your chops if you didn't have your flag flying 4th of July, Memorial Day, you know, Veterans Day, all these things. And I saw him get on some guys that were in uniform and didn't stand properly for the colors as they passed in the 4th of July parade.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they were off duty. He was off duty, but he's like, nope, this is not going to fly.
Now, when you're hanging outside, let's say you're going away, like we have gone away, but you want to leave it out.
Yep.
Is that acceptable? Do I have to be there?
You don't have to be there, but if it's going to be out in the weather, it has to be an all-weather flag. So like a nylon polyester.
It's that most of them, I would think.
Yeah, some are still cotton fabric. But and if you're going to leave it up at night, it has to be lit. You got
to have
a light.
That's easy
on.
Enough now. You go to Home Depot, and they've got those solar lights.
Yeah,
that's simple solution. And they're like floodlights, those things.
Yeah.
That's intense. Okay, so it has to be lit up, but you can leave it out there.
It only has to be lit enough so where you can see it's an American flag. You don't have to wake your neighbors with a bright light.
What if you have an Arizona flag and a U.S. flag?
Okay.
How do you arrange that?
Okay, so there's a lot to that. The U.S. flag always stands to its own right. So if it's in a parade with other flags, it's on the right side.
Okay.
And it's the blue... is going forward.
Okay.
Right?
All right. And the Arizona flag would be to the left. Can it be the same height?
Yes. If it's in a group of flags, like you'll see this in front of city halls, you'll have POW flag, the city flag, whatever, Arizona flag, American flag. The American flag is always front and center. And
it's always a little bit higher.
Yeah. And a little bit higher is preferable.
Okay. I got another question on the U.S. flag, though. A lot of this stuff, sadly, is not made in the U.S. You will get U.S. flags, and they're made.
That's a sore spot.
You flip it over, and you're trying to find a U.S. flag made in the USA.
Yep.
And what does it say? Made in China.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
I just bought some, and I made sure it was a made in USA company.
Yeah.
I'm like, of all things, made in the USA.
You can pay a couple extra dollars to get a made in the USA flag, but there's a lot that's coming from China and other countries.
Yeah, no China flag.
Yeah.
No.
You got some more? I got to take a break.
I do have a few more.
A couple more when we come back. Remember, there's a great special going on at Zero Res Northern Arizona, Zero Res of Northern Arizona, zeroresnorthernarizona.com. That's zeroresnorthernarizona.com. If you're on the road doing a summer trip, you can get your vehicle's upholstery clean, not just your vehicle, but it could be your car, your truck, or your RV, using the same effective non-toxic ZR water that they use for your home. Save 20% up until June 10th on auto interior cleanings with promo code MAYGETAWAY. That's MAYGETAWAY. Go to ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. Type in May Getaway as the promo code, and you can get this your upholstery cleaned in your vehicle. Plus, they've got some great specials going on for your homes, for your carpet, for your tile, and they also do the upholstery cleaning for your furniture in your house as well. Go to ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. That's ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. Back in a minute.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Is the Biden economic disaster hitting your household a bit harder than you expected? Is inflation killing your personal budget? Now, Just Wireless was here for you in 2009, and they are here for you in 2023. Why would you pay full price for a new smartphone when you can get a great refurbished phone at Just Wireless and save a whole bunch of money? Or if you're like me, I've taken my smartphone to Just Wireless to get it repaired. They've taken care of cracked screens, charging port problems. They can also change out that battery. Check out Just Wireless's two locations in Flagstaff, across from the Flagstaff Mall and also on Milton Avenue, right as I-17 comes into town. Stop on by today and see how your hometown, locally owned cell phone guru can help you save money. And also check them out at JustWirelessAZ.com. That's JustWirelessAZ.com.
Listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
Mark Howitz here with me, going over, finishing up on some the do's and don'ts of your handling your flag,
handling your American flag, and really it applies to Arizona flags. And
okay,
there's a few other national flags we have as well. But anyway, this is an important paragraph. This is from the VA.gov. It says, during the hoisting or lowering of the flag, or when it passes in parade or review, Americans should stand at attention facing the flag. Place their right hand over their heart. Uniformed military members render the military salute. Men not in uniform should remove any headdress and hold it in their right hand at their left shoulder, the hand resting over the heart. Those who are not U.S. citizens should just stand at attention. So if you're not a U.S. citizen, you wouldn't put your hand over your heart because you're not pledging to this country.
I've been to a lot of events so that retired U.S. military, even though they're not in uniform, they salute the flag, and they say that is perfectly acceptable.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. And I agree with that 100%, and so that's good that I – yeah, yep. So you're not a U.S. citizen, though. Yeah, you stand. That's what I would do if I was in another country.
Yeah.
I'd pay respect. I would stand and, you know, just – you respect that nation.
That's right.
Well, there might be a couple where you'd be like –
but you don't put your hand over your heart because you're not pledging
exactly. I'm not pledging it to that flag. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Burning of the flag, is it legal or is it not legal?
It is legal, I believe.
So the Supreme Court decided
it
was an expression of free speech. Yeah. The Congress passed a law against it.
Okay.
But then the Supreme Court decided, no, that law is not valid because it is an expression of free speech.
Yeah.
I'm against flag burning. There is a time when you should burn your flag. You know when that is?
No.
If the flag is worn out or not fit for display anymore, you're supposed to dispose of it by burning. Now, this isn't burning it in the streets like gasoline.
Protests and
this is like
around it,
folding up, you know, bonfire.
You burn it because it's just done. And I have one like that actually
it's kind of like
needs to go.
You know,
it looks like it went through the Revolutionary War.
Right. It's kind of like incinerating one of your relatives, you know, into ashes and bury them. Same kind of concept.
All right.
So that's the federal laws. There's also Arizona laws about flags, and so. You know, a lot of HOAs try to ban things.
Yeah.
They try to ban political
signs. Can't
put your flag
out, yeah.
Can't put your flag out, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the legislature wisely overrid those. And you can display an American flag, obviously. In addition to that, you can do the POW-MIA flag.
Okay.
You've seen that. The black
even if your
HOA
is saying no.
Even if they're saying no. Arizona state flag. Arizona Indian Nations flag. So Navajo Nation, Hopi, whoever.
Sure.
The Gadsden flag.
The Don't Tread on Me.
Don't Tread on Me, the mm-hmm. Timber Rattlesnake.
Yep.
You can fly that one.
Oh, that'd go over great in some Flagstaff HOA neighborhoods.
Yep. And that's actually possibly older than the American flag. You know, it's roughly the same time period as the American flag.
So they can't do that. That's a First Amendment right.
It's to Arizona fly. Right.
Okay.
Under the Arizona law.
Okay.
And also first responder flags or a gold service or blue service star flag.
Okay. All right. That's a lot. I know there's more.
There is.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's, you have the right to have a flagpole as tall as your house, regardless of HOA rules.
Even the HOA. Yeah. Okay. And I know there was a lot of battles that happened with all that, especially back about 10 years ago. I remember a lot of people opposing their HOA on these issues.
Yep.
All right, Mark. I appreciate it. Have a safe trip.
Thanks.
For the second time. Because I know that we did this recently, and it was like, okay, I'll see you like the end of June, maybe, or early July, but you're on your 7-year sabbatical, which I didn't know about really. I should have known. But I'm getting there, but no, I'll be back soon. This whole week we've got new programming for you, and then taking some time off with my family, and Mark is doing the same, but also a dig in Israel as well. So enjoy that and hope you find,
Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Yeah. The Indiana Jones. He's the Indiana Jones out there. All right. We'll talk with you soon. Safe travels.
Thanks.
All right, and love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Get your comments in. And when we get back, well, when I get back from some time off, I'll be getting to those. Hang tight. Back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show.
Car repairs can be stressful. Jeff Horovitz here, and since most shops pay their mechanics a flat rate based on the auto repair, your mechanic can either be racing against the clock or tempted to tack on extra parts. Now, Crazy Country Boys, they don't play that game, and their shop rates are about 30% less. Now, Big Jim makes sure his technicians are not rushing and that you only pay for the parts that you really need. As a TechNet through CarQuest Service Center, all parts and labor are backed by a 24-month, 24,000-mile nationwide warranty. Now, CarQuest, that's another great company in Flagstaff, family-owned auto parts store in Flagstaff, serving you for over half a century. Don't overpay for auto repair or service. Call Big Jim at Crazy Country Boys Services at 928-607-9753. That's 928-607-9753. 928-607-9753. Crazy Country Boys Services, using only CarQuest guaranteed auto parts. Crazy good. Just past the Flagstaff Mall off the East Empire Avenue exit.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show.
Let's see. I do have a question here that I was saving for you. Jeff and Angela, good to hear Angela on the show more. Got a real estate question. How'd you get started in rental properties, Ed?
Mm.
Do you want to address that one?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, because I've addressed it before in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm throwing this at you like spur of the moment.
Yeah, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, you want to do this more, you got it.
About 20 years, maybe a little more than 20 years ago. A
couple decades, yeah.
We decided to partner up with...
Yeah, we partnered with several with people at first because it was...
For the money.
It's a hard thing.
You know, half of the money instead of the whole amount of the money.
It's hard to... You got to be careful with that too, though, because we've had partners that we've had to, move on from.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful if you pick, because it's hard to pull up the money to come up with the capital, Ed, to buy real estate.
And this was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So prices were lower,
but we made a lot less.
But anyway, we found a place, I think it was the 3-bedroom house, but it had a detached garage.
Yes.
The very first one we ever bought. And the detached garage, we thought, oh, that could be another unit.
Yep, second unit.
And so we bought it. We rented out the house and then started converting the garage to a second unit.
Yeah.
And not only does that make the property more valuable on resale, but then you get more rent. And so the rent on the house was covering our payment. And so we just needed to come up with money
to do the remodel. Yeah. Yeah. It's called sweat equity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fortunately, you and your dad and you have experience in remodels and construction in general and what to look for and, you know, inspecting places. And so
we didn't expect that one too good though, because when we got in there, shortly after we got in the main house, we ripped up the carpet and the floor is kind of dipping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this. Next thing you know, we're ripping out the floor and realize that the floor joists are in the dirt. This is an old house. This is an ammo box house.
Yeah, I remember
that. They used from the Navajo Army Depot back in the day. After World War II, they'd get the ammo boxes and they actually used those to build the house. To build the main, but like block, like cinder block. But the floor joists were just kind of sticking in the ground. Maybe they throw a rock under, part of all rotten. Next thing you know, we're ripping out the floor. We had to re-pour bring a concrete truck in and re-pour the whole floor concrete to address that issue.
You could tell how old it was because the stairs were like in an L shaped and the ceiling was really low. And then we had renters move in there and they were complaining they couldn't get the mattress up the stairs.
Yeah, because back in the day, they didn't have a mattress
or it was a smaller mattress.
Was it called a single or whatever. Yeah. It's like, oh, my king's, everything's become king size over the years. Yeah.
So, anyway, it's sweat equity. We then rented out the second unit as a, you know, one bedroom studio type of thing. Yeah,
basically, we had a duplex.
Did we do the equity on that one where we took our loan.
This was the early 2000s. Times have changed. It's always different, but it's possible in different ways to
I think we did refinance the loan
and took some money
pulled
out.
The equity out.
And bought another place.
Then it appraised for more because the whole thing was more valuable. So then we took the equity out, whatever it was. I don't know. I don't remember.
It was probably
like 50,000 maybe.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Something. Yeah. And we went and purchased another one.
Yeah. And then we kind of rinsed and repeated.
Yeah. And we kind of kept that method up of, you know, making the property better and worth more and then taking equity out of that one and rolling it into another one.
Keep rolling it. Yeah. Here's the thing. Well, first of all, times have changed as far as how you can do that cash out, equity, refinance, things like that. Yeah. Talk to Kim Dawson. I mean, she's a great sponsor here in the program. Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. I'll throw that in there, but we would do that and we would, you gotta find what people aren't seeing. You gotta look at it and say, well, oh, there's another unit here. And the key there was it was zoned multifamily. If you have another unit on a single family residential lot, chances are you can't do it. However, wherever you're at, we were dealing in Flagstaff. It was easier back then, I'll tell you that. But a lot of communities like Flagstaff and others, they have started to allow the accessory dwelling units, ADUs, on property to it used to be, and I'm not sure, each community varies, but it used to be that you can only do it the mother-in-law quarter.
Yeah, right.
Now I think they don't have to be family member in some towns and cities. So you may be able to get something like that going.
True.
On a lot. Check. I'm not your lawyer. I'm not your land developer. Check your local zoning and all that. If you're somewhat handy, you can do it over time.
Right, yeah.
And even though costs have gone up a lot, Ed, even though everything's gone up. It's become harder to build things. I think it's still possible. Drawing out equity and rolling it over like we did from probably 2002 to the crash in 2008, probably not as feasible anymore.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. We haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, that was...
That's just how we got started.
That was an interesting time, and we lived through that, and we definitely took advantage of the banking system that was present at the time.
Yes.
We were fortunate that we always put things into cash flowing... positive cash flowing assets.
We had a lot of money borrowed, but the rent, as long as it was rented out,
and we were always
covering, is it
cash flowing plus extra in case
meantime,
it crashes?
We had our, you know, 9 to 5 type income.
9 to 5,
And so
it was more like seven.
We weren't reliant upon the rental income.
No, this was for the future.
Time.
This was for the future. And the future happened a lot quicker than we thought. We were able to get pretty independent because of that.
Yeah.
But we started off with one.
Yeah.
We started off with one unit. And we own flagstafforlease.com and you can go to the site. I mean, you can check it out. You know, we have commercial properties now and residential properties. I don't know, we probably have 80 doors, something like that.
Yeah.
At one time we had about 100. We scaled back a little bit.
Right.
That's all from one though. And it wasn't an inheritance. It was sweat equity. It's always going to be different though going forward, but it's definitely still possible.
Jeff was always good at talking to people and he found a couple. Well, we went in with a different partner on a couple that were pretty much almost condemned.
Totally
vacant.
That was when everything crashed.
Yeah. And
in 2009-10.
No one else wanted it.
Yep.
And then he was also good at talking to owners and trying to get them to carry the loan for a little bit, like even for just a short amount of time. Like, we'll pay you instead of trying to get a bank loan.
Yeah.
And because if we have a lot of credit out there, the bank loans were harder. And so he was good about, you know, kind of smooth talking people and smooth, you know, making deals with people that with, yeah, you know, maybe a little bit higher interest or,
yeah, if you can take care of the owner finance. I think we're going back to that with the banking troubles we've, mm-hmm, got. It's probably harder to qualify. Banks are leery to hand out money for speculative projects. So finding that owner carry back on other projects, commercial projects, residential, multifamily, things like that. People who have paid things off, and are sick of being in the property management business. Yeah. That's another way to do it.
We just got rid of our very last owner financed one with the one you talked about with Kim Dawson that just refinanced our loan.
Oh yeah, that was just last year.
Last,
yeah,
summer, that was our last owner carried loan. Yeah.
And that was from the mid-2000s.
And that one was a long time.
You're right, I forgot
about
that.
It was in a trust or something, and yeah, whoever had control.
Well, he
of the
wanted
trust
to keep going too. He was talking. I wasn't sure. When I talked to the carrier of that note, he's like, well, yeah, I'm making good interest. I think we're paying him 6-7%. Yeah. He's fine, mm-hmm, with that.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, maybe we'll do it a few more years. And I was like, a few more years? I don't trust the banking industry, yeah, right now. I'm concerned that I might not be able to cash you out. So I'm going to have to do it now.
Yeah. That's why we went to Kim Dawson. Then,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of,
There's more
than one way to do it. It's just dedication and wanting. Always, though, you got to have cash flow whenever you do any of these, mm-hmm, things. And I ain't your financial advisor. I got to stress that because, things are weird
And
nowadays.
It was not always easy either.
It's not, yeah.
We had to learn our lesson the hard way many times. We still have times where we get, we get someone that's just not paying and, we're out thousands of dollars before you know it. And it still
many
happens,
thousands,
but
yeah,
that is the
we
name
had people
of the
take
game.
Advantage of COVID non-payment.
Yeah.
You know, they took that for granted and then got mad at us when we finally were able to kick them out. I've sat in a building, right at the 9-10 crash that we had just purchased and, it was half vacant and you're like, oh man.
Yeah.
But you learn a lot. I just say, a little bit at a time, sweat equity, being able to do, I love the people who say, oh, you just get the property manager and you get somebody to take it. This is a very hands-on, mm-hmm, business. I'm sure that some people, it's not, Donald Trump or somebody, but
us though,
mom
it's,
and pop
it's a
type
daily,
operation.
Yep. It is daily, yep, and it has provided us a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, we can do the show on Thursday and leave for Friday.
I work from home. And so whenever our first kid came along, there was no should we put her in daycare or not. Yeah. It was always just like I can work from home and take care of kids and still volunteer at school and, have my own schedule. As long as I get my work done, who cares when it's done? So it has worked out for us very well.
Yeah. So just keep plugging along and you'll get there if that's what you want to do, no matter what the business is. Cause we started in business in multimedia really, mm-hmm, started that from an apartment bedroom.
Yeah.
Doing all that. So it's just a matter. And what's your passion too? Real estate's always been, if it's not your passion, if you hate,
Some people get one rental and that's all they get. And it's just kind of extra
income. 20-30 years, it's a nice little thing.
And in a while, the loan is paid off and then the income is even better because you don't have a loan on it.
Yeah,
so
exactly. All right. Love to hear from you. Thanks for that question, I guess, and comment, Ed. Talkwithjeff@icloud.com. That's talkwithjeff@icloud.com. You know that I recently had the blinds replaced in my house. And when we decided to get this done, obviously we called my friends at the Blind Brothers and we weren't going to deal with anybody else because this is a great Northern Arizona company. They don't use subcontractors, so you know who you're dealing with. Now, the Blind Brothers came in, they laid out all the options for us. We picked out, my wife Angela and I, a great set of blinds. They gave us a great price. We opted to have them do the installation, which they can do for up to half off the price, as well as any other advertised specials. It's a great deal. They came in, they took out all the old blinds, got rid of them, hung the new blinds. They work perfect. We are very, very happy. I want you to do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers for a free estimate at 928-634-2423. I know you're going to be happy. That's 928-634-2423. Or go online. They have great monthly specials at theblindbrothers.com.
You're listening listening to the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Call Diamond Auto Glass first before making an auto glass claim. Here's why. Most insurance companies use a nationwide glass shop to answer their calls, and they're going to try and route you to their shop, which may very well delay the time it takes to replace your glass. When you get a rock chip in your windshield, stop by Diamond Auto Glass as soon as possible. Repairing a chip will stop it from spreading and save you from a costly windshield replacement. If you've replaced your windshield with Diamond Auto Glass, you have a lifetime chip repair warranty and no appointments necessary. Just stop on by on 4th Street in Flagstaff, and most chip repairs take about 10 to 15 minutes. Always call Diamond Auto Glass first at 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. All right, welcome back. I do have a comment here from Chuck, and remember, you can email anytime. When I get back, we'll throw all these on the pile, and we'll start going through comments once again. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hey, Jeff, have you guys ever been to Glacier National Park?
Yes, we have.
Yes, we have. That was beautiful.
Yeah. I actually went there when I was a teenager, so in kind of like the mid-90s. And then we went back there 2 years ago for Isabel's high school graduation. We went on a rafting trip on the river that it's called the Flathead. And it separates the national park from the non-national park. So it's right on the border of the national park. So
yeah, because you cannot river raft in the national park, right. I think. But this goes right along
the border. It's right along the side. So it kind of divides the national park and the rest of the
Yeah, I love that area. I wish, and this is the very northwestern part
goes to the Canadian
of Montana.
Border.
Yeah, right to the border. And it's strange because if you've been to like Yellowstone, for example, and other areas of Montana, it's more like Arizona as far as the pine trees and the little drier. But you get into that northwest corner of Montana, Glacier National Park, that whole area.
Like Missoula and all that.
Yeah, from that point on, it is like the Northwest. Yeah. It's like going up into Washington, Oregon,
right.
And it's really green, really wet.
Yeah.
And I love that spot. I wish we could have found that probably 20 years too late because the prices have accelerated quite rapidly there.
Like
real estate.
Like buy land or something.
Yeah. Been discovered by 2 decades or more.
We have a tip though, because this is something we didn't know. Well, when I was there as a teenager, we just drove in there and, you know, that was back in the 90s, so we just kind of, you know, drove into the park. Now you have to get, like, a permit, or I don't know if they call it a permit, but you have to, like, register and get a number to actually get into the road that goes over the pass. And I think that's unless it's after 5, you can get in there without having pre-registered.
Yeah.
So,
which
in other words,
doing.
They only let a certain amount of people in to drive over the pass, the mountain pass.
Because there's only one road.
Yeah, there's one road. It gets really busy. It's really clogged. It's one, you know, like a 2-lane, so only one lane each way. And there's campers and all this stuff. So you have to, if possible, get your permit beforehand. And
to drive into the park, you said.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to wait until after 5 o'clock to be able to drive over the pass.
Which is okay because it stays lighter.
Yeah.
Much
and
later.
We did that because I didn't know about the permit thing when we went two
we
years
took
ago.
The back way.
Yeah.
There's a secret back
way,
or at least there was, and there was a dirt road and whole other story. You'd have to ask the locals.
We went late one night and we took this really beautiful hike out to Avalanche Lake, which is actually something Jim Driscoll told us about.
Oh yeah, Sheriff Driscoll.
So that was an amazing hike, and it was, you know, doable with the kids and everything.
Yeah,
it
well
was great.
Worth going, but like a lot of places nowadays, if you're traveling, you might need to book stuff in advance. It's never like you show up anymore and you can just get in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's really changed.
After 5 o'clock you can, but at least that's the way it was.
That's the way it was.
So check
anywhere you go nowdays because it's not like the old days where
it's
you just show
up. It's kind of annoying because sometimes you just like to show up and
spontaneous.
You don't know what day you're going to be there. It just works
blame
out.
Blame it on the internet. But get out there and enjoy places like that. Thanks, Chuck. That was an awesome place. We've got a lot more to come. Hang tight. Back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to The Jeff Orbit Show. Be part of the program by calling 877-971-3971.
All right, welcome to another hour of the show here. As my family travels and takes some time off for Angela and I 25th anniversary, but we have a lot of stuff here for you to come this hour. Erin Brown, I caught up with her from the Arizona Game and Fish. All kinds of details when it comes to hunting, outdoor things in the great state of Arizona. So stick around. We'll get to that here in just a second. Rob Wilson also joins me in this interview. Hey, your home is likely your largest asset. Don't trust just any agent out there. Well, your Uncle Bill or something that just sells one home every 5 years and just got his real estate license. Kelly Broaddus has extensive experience and knowledge of the market right here in the Flagstaff and surrounding areas. And thanks to Kelly's proven marketing system, she is constantly helping homeowners sell for thousands over asking price. Kelly's full team of dedicated professionals, they're going to walk you through every step of the process from listing to close with complete transparency. Call the only agent that I would call if I needed to sell a home in Flagstaff or surrounding area right now. If I was trying to book out of here and go to, say, Hawaii or something, I would call Kelly Broaddus with the Broaddus Properties Group brokered by EXP. Although I don't think I could live in Hawaii for very long for a lot of reasons, but we'll talk about that another time. Why don't you call Kelly Broaddus at 888-446-5602. And by the way, you can find your home's value in about 60 seconds or less without talking to an agent. Just go to NorthernArizonaFindHomes.com. And in the menu, just click on home valuation and enter your address to receive an instant email with your home's current market value. That's NorthernArizonaFindHomes.com. NorthernArizonaFindHomes.com. Erin Brown's with us from Arizona Game and Fish. She's a wildlife manager. Erin, how you doing?
Good, Jeff. Appreciate the invite. Thanks for having me here.
I feel left out. I'm the only one unarmed in here.
But you're well protected.
This is a very well protected studio, so that's a good thing.
And, you know, I think everybody out there probably wants Erin's job. She's a wildlife officer.
Yeah, wildlife manager
of the wildlife.
Yeah, yeah. So now it's. I'm excited to have you on because so many people have asked questions about when it comes to hunting and fishing, and you brought up watercraft issues that you want to talk about, and then that led to the ATV, UTV issues that we're seeing out there. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. Have you seen a lot of when it comes to the animal population? I mean, when you have a winter like that. I mean, have you seen a lot of, what's the word I should use, carnage or just, you know, general just die off?
Not necessarily. The bigger animals, they have the ability to really move down. They find lower elevations. They all have winter habitat and summer habitat.
Yeah.
Animals like the turkeys, they're a smaller bird. They need to get moving and find some better country once the snow hits.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, Rob.
You know, today is the one-year anniversary of the tunnel fire, and we lost, you know, obviously a lot of forest to tunnel and then a lot more to pipeline. What impacts have the fires had on the animals that you've seen and hunting opportunities?
Typically, when those fires roll through, we do see some impact. Usually, like I said, the animals can kind of move out of the way. Some of those are some quick burning fires and those raise some problems. But the main thing we see in wildfires is in a couple of years, we have some really good habitat.
Yeah. A lot of grasses and meadows.
Lot of new growth comes up and the animals really like that.
I can't believe it's been a year. What a difference a year makes that we're dealing with fires already.
1 year.
Of course, it's been windy and stuff too, though. And there's grasses. I am concerned about those grasses. Those grasses have grown like crazy. All over the place, and you know they're going to be drying out here pretty soon.
Down the valley's getting ready to get
hard. Yeah, getting crisp, and people throw out a cigarette. I have another question here. So hunter safety courses, are they required for, because I know my son Owen and my daughter Olivia both got their youth hunting and fishing licenses, and I don't remember having to do any kind of safety course specifically. Right now my son is primarily, dove season, and then coming up here, well, we're already waiting for duck season, which is quite a ways off, but getting him ready for that. What age groups for hunter safety courses, or is it by game? Is it by animal?
So hunter safety is required for if you're going to hunt 10 to 14 year olds need to take hunter safety. It's okay. required for that age group. They have to carry their card with them when they're hunting. Now, kids under 10 can hunt without a license with a licensed adult.
Okay.
You can fish. Kids under 10 can fish. The adult doesn't have to be licensed, so they can fish. But once they turn 10, there's that $5 hunt fish combo. It's a great deal. Cheaper than a Happy Meal.
Okay, so when we're out there hunting dove together with my, let's see if I can get in legal trouble on the air, with my 11-year-old and we're together, he did not take that hunter safety course. He's supposed to.
So hunter safety, they need to take it before they put in for any, or before they hunt big game.
Okay, big game.
So
okay.
small game is open.
Okay.
But if they want to hunt big game, they need to take hunter ed. They can hunt big game once they're 10 years old, and yeah. that's they can take hunter ed at 9 and okay. be ready to hunt when they're 10.
You get a lot to take it even if they're doing the smaller game. Maybe we, maybe, you know, is that something that a lot of people are opting into?
I highly recommend it. I think there's a lot of good information in there from firearm safety, ethics, laws. I think it's a really good experience for kids, even adults. Once you're 14, you don't have to have hunter ed. But I highly recommend it. You get an extra bonus point for the draw,
okay.
a lifetime bonus point once you've taken it.
Yeah. It's like, Rob, it's like the concealed carry course is no longer required to Correct. Carry concealed in Arizona. But you highly recommend it
Absolutely.
For all the training aspects.
You want to know the law before you have to
yeah.
know the law.
Yeah, exactly, before you get yourself in that type of situation. All right, we are talking with Erin Brown. She's Arizona Game and Fish Department Wildlife Manager. What areas do you cover, by the way?
So I'm the wildlife manager in Game Management Unit 6A.
Okay.
So basically from Flagstaff towards Camp Verde.
To Camp, yeah, that's in my, we go down to Camp Verde a lot. That's, we're just on the other side of West Clear Creek where we're at. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Yeah, or is on the other side of Verde, actually.
Verde.
The north side of the Verde.
Yeah, the Verde.
Yeah, yeah, so that's 6A. That's such a big area, such a varied area, because, I mean, you're talking desert type situation to, mountainous, it's all mountainous, but you know, pine trees and all that.
Yeah, it's a really neat unit. You know, it's definitely when all these roads are closed up here, I go patrol down south.
I have another question here. Hunting on private property, I guess limitations, there's been a bunch of questions on limitations, distances from structures. I think even you brought this up, Rob.
Yep.
Especially for folks in more rural areas, county areas, et cetera, et cetera. What is the rule on hunting on private property? I mean, regardless, you have to have the hunting license or the fishing license if you're fishing, even if you're on private property, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So wildlife is actually held in trust by the state. So it's, even if the wildlife is on private property, it's still wildlife. You have to have all your permits, your hunting, fishing license, your tag for big game if you're hunting big game. And you can hunt on your private property. The rule with the distances, it's a quarter mile. You cannot discharge a firearm and now bow or pneumatic weapons within a quarter mile.
Bow too? Who did that?
So
one of us, somebody somewhere did something stupid.
Did you do this, Erin?
Well, that has a lot to do with the metro units.
Okay.
So 11M around Flagstaff, and I feel like we'll be getting there a little later in the discussion.
Okay.
But as far as the private property, when you're talking about going onto other people's private property, if the property is posted, no hunting, no trespassing, you don't get to go there. If it's not posted, but the property owner or somebody comes out and talks to you and asks you to leave, then you're out right then.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the issues we see is if someone harvests, you know, someone shoots an elk, wounds it, and it takes off onto private property, and then that property owner doesn't want you on there, your next step is to call us.
What happens there? So run that by. I'm sure it's happened before.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the wildlife is held in trust by the state, so technically the state still has permission. They have the ability to go get the wildlife. That would be me. To go get that wildlife, and once you've tagged it, it becomes your wildlife.
Okay, so Rob shoots an elk on my property.
No, on public property.
A public property. And it runs onto my property.
Yeah.
It dies. And yep. I'm like, thank you. I got an elk.
Then Aaron's my hero. No. Because
Rob calls Aaron, calls Game and Fish, and you say, no, you go come to my door and say, hey, we got to get that elk. It's Rob. And then you get it to Rob?
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, that sounds reasonable. Yeah. I mean, you would maybe give the guy a cut or something. Just sure. A little piece. I mean, why not? You know, that'd be nice to do. Okay. Back to the distance, though, and I want to loop back to this arrow thing because my plans are being thwarted right as we speak, Aaron. The bow and arrow, so that's now a quarter mile from another structure or a neighboring property.
So the original rule was that you could not hunt within a quarter mile, or I'm sorry, you could not discharge a firearm within a quarter mile of a structure for the purpose of taking wildlife hunting. So in the metro units, we were starting to have some trouble with this. For example, 11M around Flagstaff, there's just a ton of deer.
Yeah.
We had people hunting within Flagstaff, within the city, Schweitzer Mesa, those areas, and getting too close to buildings. But those 11M hunts are archery hunts.
Okay.
So there was nothing saying, well, you can't discharge a bow within a quarter mile. It was only firearm.
Okay.
So we made those changes.
So now it's bow.
To keep those in those metro units to keep people from hunting right next to houses.
Is that rural as well? Is that statewide? So 6A, for example.
I believe it's just the metro units. You're going to stump me on that one.
That's fine. And if you want to get back, and I'll let everyone know. And this is totally selfish, and that's generally why I do this show, is to be selfish.
Of course.
And I'd love to hear back on this one because I know somebody that has a rural property, but there is a neighbor within a quarter mile. And bow hunting is definitely an option. So I'd love to hear back on that one in the more rural areas. If you get permission, is there so let's say Rob lives just under a quarter mile from me and I say, Rob, is it okay if I, I'm goose hunting or whatever. Is that an exception?
Yep. If you get permission from the property owners, you can do that.
This is getting better. This is looking optimistic, Rob.
There's a chance.
There's a chance. I don't want Erin to have to show up because she's in both regions that I live in. So she's going to show up. And it's like, Jeff, we talked about this. You have no defense now because now you aired it on the air. Yeah, absolutely.
You don't even have that.
All right. We'd love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Always enjoy your comments and get those in anytime. All right, a couple of great specials going on right now up at ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. As you know, Zero Res of Northern Arizona offers all kinds of great services to get your home clean, including your tile floors, the carpet in your house, even the furniture, the fabric cleaning of your couches. I bet you don't think about doing that. It can get pretty messy. Plus, if you're thinking about, or maybe you're planning to go on a road trip, summer road trip, and maybe you got an RV, maybe just your car or truck, or you got a camper, you know that can get pretty nasty. You might have not cleaned it last year. Why don't you get the flooring, the floor mats, the fabric, even leather upholstery, get that wiped down on the surfaces with ZR Water. This is a great thing to do before you hit the road for your summer trip. Right now, by the way, Zero Res of Northern Arizona has 20% off on vehicle cleanings. Just use the promo code MAYGETAWAY. That's MAYGETAWAY when you go to ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. There's a couple other great specials up there, too, that you can use the promo code MAYGETAWAY, including 3 rooms of carpet cleaning, Zero Resified, I should say, for $129. Go up to ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. That's ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. Use promo code MAYGETAWAY. Back in just a minute.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Is the Biden economic disaster hitting your household a bit harder than you expected? Is inflation killing your personal budget? Now, Just Wireless was here for you in 2009, and they are here for you in 2023. Why would you pay full price for a new smartphone when you can get a great refurbished phone at Just Wireless and save a whole bunch of money? Or if you're like me, I've taken my smartphone to Just Wireless to get it repaired. They've taken care of cracked screens, charging port problems. They can also change out that battery. Check out Just Wireless's 2 locations in Flagstaff, across from the Flagstaff Mall, and also on Milton Avenue, right as I-17 comes into town. Stop on by today and see how your hometown, locally owned cell phone guru can help you save money. And also check them out at JustWirelessAZ.com. That's JustWirelessAZ.com.
listening to The Jeff Orbit Show.
Let's see here. Other questions that folks have. Oh, we were talking about the urban areas. And where we're sitting right now, you'll probably walk out and there'll be a deer out there. They've pretty much become domesticated, Aaron. Is there, and we're talking Flagstaff specifically, overpopulation? Are we going to open up these areas for like a spear hunt or wrestling or something? I mean, is
deer what, wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, is it such a problem that it's just, you know, just so many in the community? And what do you do when it gets to that point? Or am I just seeing things?
Well, to start, I have wrestled a deer, and you do not want to do that. You wrestled? Okay? Don't do that.
Okay, that's a whole other story. We'll save that one. Yeah.
So this is an incredibly challenging issue. We've been dealing with this for a long time, so it's not just you. What we're dealing with is Unit 11M. It's a much bigger unit than just the city. It goes around the city and...
City of Flagstaff.
The City of Flagstaff, okay. Yep. And this population, the hunts aren't specifically targeting the deer within the city, within the city limits, because we're looking at that quarter mile issue. But we are impacting the whole population in the unit.
Okay.
But it's quite a challenge just because these deer are comfortable here.
Oh, yeah.
We have, this is, you know, these challenges involving why we had to move to no discharging bows and pneumatic weapons within a quarter mile. We have all these folks hunting within cities, and we've had to have them move out. But these deer, we have also implemented some doe hunts in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with wildlife, the female segment of the population is what drives the population.
Yeah.
So these doe hunts are going to help us out a little bit and try to bring this population.
Well, that's more in the, because of the quarter mile thing. It's more on the periphery, and you're hoping you take the population out in those more less populated areas that then the ones move out. I don't know though, because I've seen the same ones.
Yes.
Like they have names. I mean, we can identify them. So I don't know if they're leaving.
Well, and you're also looking at a generational training. Now these fawns were born in the city, yep, in the neighborhoods. This is where they know. This is where they live.
City deer.
And I'm really glad we're on this topic because it brings up a very valid point, wildlife feeding. One of the issues we're having in the city of Flagstaff and multiple cities is feeding wildlife.
Yep. Oh, look at it. They're so cute.
They're really cute, but they're even cuter when they're in the woods,
yep,
where they belong. So we have folks within the neighborhoods feeding these animals, intentionally or unintentionally. In bigger counties like Pima and Maricopa, it's illegal to feed wildlife. It's not so in Coconino County. However, we have a Flagstaff feeding ordinance, which basically says you cannot feed wildlife within city limits. If you have bird feeders, you have to have them 4 feet off the ground. So we're trying to keep these attractants because these deer come in here and they know nobody's going to come after them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're well fed and happy. So
yeah,
why would they leave?
You practice. It's almost become like the deer farm.
Life is good.
Yeah, they're almost pettable deer at this point, which I don't recommend.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you ever see those videos like in Yellowstone where the people get mauled by the elk and the moose and the buffalo? So
thank
it's
you,
just
Darwin.
Insane. Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. Good to know there, but you're just monitoring, I guess. I mean, do you ever get to a situation? Have we ever been in a situation where you've had to come in and remove them, or like you see a situation where game and fish might have to say, we've got to thin the herd in the urban areas, the cores?
That's really a last case scenario. Okay. And it's not where we want to go. That doesn't really follow our tenets of using, you know, wildlife is a resource. We don't want to go in and just take out a bunch of deer.
Okay.
We would hope that we can get them out of the neighborhoods.
Okay, Rob's got a question when we come back. Hold on to that one. I've got some more, what I think is practical questions. We want to get, Rob's laughing. We want to get into the off-road vehicle stuff and the watercraft and stuff like that. So stick around. And any comments, folks, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Don't forget to catch Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least every Saturday at noon. couple ways you can listen now, of course, through bigtalkerradio.com. If you're in the Prescott area, 107.9 FM. If you're in the Flag, well, not just Flagstaff, anywhere in Northern Arizona, 97.1 FM. Now, Glenn's a family guy. I've known him for quite a few years. I don't tell you how to invest your money. I will never do that. I do tell you to talk to as many people as possible, educate yourself as much as possible. And, I think talking to Glenn and getting that second opinion, having him take a look at your portfolio, seeing if he's a good fit is a really good idea. Call for a complimentary consultation right now at 928-225-2474. That's Glenn Leist at WT Wealth Management at 928-225-2474. More to come. Hang tight. Back in just a minute.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show. You're listening to the Jeff Horovitz Show.
All right, we'll get back to my interview here, me and Rob Wilson's interview with Aaron Brown from Arizona Game and Fish in just a second. You know, last year I refinanced a multifamily property with Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans, and she did a great job for me and my family, and I know she'll do the same for you. Nova Home Loans is Arizona's largest privately owned mortgage lender, and they offer local decision making like a bank, but they have better access to more programs like a broker. That saves you time, saves you effort, saves you money. Kim's going to show you how much cash you can actually qualify for and what price range you should be out there looking for, because you can get a pre-approval letter from Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. It's almost like having cash in hand, and it lets sellers know how serious you are. For purchases or refinances, I want you to call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458. That's Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans at 928-310-6458. Or you can go to novahomeloans.com/Kim Dawson. Oh, by the way, if you mention the Jeff Horovitz Show, you get $250 off the lender's fee at closing. Call Kim Dawson, 928-310-6458. Kim Dawson, NMLS 697411. Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087, BK number 090242, Equal Housing Opportunity. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions may apply.
You know, you were talking about the fact that we shouldn't be feeding wildlife. Feeding deer and feeding the elk actually contributes to the problems that we're faced with here. And it brought up the thought to me that that also brings in predators, whether they be bears or other things. So where those animals go, the predators follow. So remember, if you're feeding those animals. And then the other thought is one of the best parts of your job as far as wildlife goes must be those bear relocations you have to do.
Those are definitely fun. I like the relocations. I like moving them out of problem areas and moving them back where they belong.
Yep.
Now, ironically enough, and I'm going to my YouTube channel here, Aaron, folks, look up Horovitz on YouTube, Horovitz, and it is, here it is, right in the middle. My top picks is Flagstaff Black Bear from 13 years ago. You can see a video of Arizona Game and Fish coming in right behind where the studio is here, removing and yep. tranquilizing the black bear. So watch that video. But you get quite a few of those calls.
You know, some years we do and some years we don't. It kind of depends on habitat conditions and what the bears are wanting to do. But our first hope is to haze them and get them out of the neighborhoods on their own. But mm-hmm. if that doesn't happen, we have to get involved.
Send a deer after them. There's so many.
There you go.
Is this something that you didn't think you'd probably have to deal with when you got into Arizona Game and Fish, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do certain things, and it's dealing with the more of the motorized vehicle side of things. I know you mentioned watercraft. What's the issue going on there?
So with watercraft this year, I mean, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but we have a lot of moisture, a lot of water in the lakes. We're going to have a good watercraft season.
Yeah.
And the main issue we deal with watercraft is safety issues. You know, the boats have to be registered. Most folks are up on that. But as far as safety goes, we do, every time we talk to a boater, we do a quick safety check. All I want to see is, so this is a test. If anybody owns watercraft, mm-hmm. when you're out this season, I'm giving you the
answer.
Pay attention here.
So I'm looking at your registration. I want to see a life jacket for every person on board. Anybody 12 and under has to be wearing that life jacket. So that means if there's five people on the boat, there has to be five life jackets on the boat.
Okay.
Type 4 throwable is that cushion that everybody sits on. that makes a really good throwing device if somebody goes in the water.
Okay.
So we want to have that. We want to have a fire extinguisher. And that's basically what I'm looking for when I contact a boat.
Yeah. And no drinking.
And I was going to say, there's no
driver. Yeah, I knew you.
Yeah. Isn't there a check for how much the minimum of alcohol you have on board?
So while I'm having these discussions about your life jackets and let me see your fire extinguisher, we're looking for impairment. Most folks, I don't know how people don't know, but we still don't know that the same laws that apply to drinking and driving on the road apply on boats, on quads, on side-by-sides, and on dirt bikes. So if you're impaired to the slightest degree, you should not be operating.
Yeah. Okay. Watercraft, what things like kayaks, canoes, they're not registered, correct?
So, you don't need registration unless you have a motor.
Okay.
But as far, I'm glad you brought up kayaks and canoes, and paddle boards. Most folks, this is kind of a newer one, but there's tons of signs up on Lake Mary now. If you're in one of those paddle craft, you have to have a life jacket on board.
Even if you're over the age of 12.
Yep. So if you're 12 and under, you have to be wearing it. Mm. If I'm on a paddleboard out on Lake Mary, I have to have a life jacket strapped to the front of my board or on me.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yep, it's
Aaron's going to bust me on a lot, Rob. I'm in trouble. Yeah. And kids kayaking down West Clear Creek. Well, we covered that the other day. And it's running so good. And once we probed it, a certain area for debris, that was kind of the challenge that you've got on these rivers and creeks right now. I've heard some people, Mark Howard was talking, I think it was Mark Howard, maybe it was Bob Thorpe, was talking about people are kayaking Walnut Canyon, like off of the, these are people that are pretty good at it, I guess, and they're like, this is once in a lifetime opportunity. So we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, I ran into a couple guys at Lake Mary the other day that were out there trying to find new water to go play on that they never have the option to play
it's
on.
It's going to be short-lived. So my kids were like, they've been on kayaks forever. They're like, this stretch of the West Clear Creek, I'm hitting it. And my older daughter's 19. I'm like, you're 19. She's like, you're going to go? I was like, this is your idea. She did it. It worked out real good. I'll send you
a life jacket, I'm sure.
She did have a I even wore a life jacket, but I had to wear Isabel's, and it was bright pink. I'll send a picture, too, because I have no shame. No. And it came down like a V, like that. And I was like, oh, man. Yeah, nobody wants to see that. Never mind. I should
point out that the life jackets need to be properly fitting and serviceable. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
It's a child's life preserver. Yeah. An adult doesn't.
Yeah. I'm honest about things, though, so. Okay, I'll get a better. I do have a better fitting one, but it was a situation where I was like, put this thing on, and the kids made me do it.
Right.
All right, Aaron Brown is with us, Arizona Game and Fish Department Wildlife Manager. Okay, the other motorized side of this, the UTVs, ATVs, and so on and so forth. It's sadly, and I was talking to Sheriff, I think it was Sheriff Driscoll last year, and there's been quite a few rollovers, and a lot of times people hold the UTVs, injuries. They hold the roll cage, and they might lose an arm or whatever. Alcohol sometimes evolves, sometimes it's just speed. What are you seeing out there? Where's this all heading? Just any thoughts on that?
I think one of the things that I've really been, it's been hitting my mind lately, in the first 8 or 9 years of my career, I might have responded to one major OHV accident a year, one or two. In the last 5 years, it's gone way up. Mm. I mean, these machines are everywhere. I don't think people realize the potential of these machines. They're not safe. I mean, they're safe if driven properly, but they come with an attitude of, I can do what I want. That includes driving too fast, driving faster than you can see.
Yeah.
If you're going around a corner, you really shouldn't be going fast if it's a blind corner. So folks are driving recklessly. They're going off roads. They're involving alcohol. And it's becoming a big issue. So we're seeing issues with the reckless operation. We're seeing a lot of, I don't know if a lot of folks know this, on quads and dirt bikes, kids have to have a helmet, under 18, helmet. Also on side-by-sides. If you're in a big Can-Am or a side-by-side like that, kids under 18 have to have a helmet.
Helmet, okay.
A DOT-approved helmet, not a bike helmet. The only exception is kids under 5. We understand we don't want a helmet on those kids, so we want them in a car seat, like their actual car seat, not like a little booster, like the federally approved car seat that goes in your car or truck.
Yeah, I always, my kids with the four-wheelers, so I'm like, helmet, helmet, and sometimes they'll sneak and they're trying to, and I'm like, really, I'm doing this, you know, and Then they have a buggy too, and with the roll cage, like helmet, yep. helmet, you know, and so it's so important on those things. What I worry about though, and this is more on the, I guess, is this something that ADOT sets, Game and Fish, or is this on the legislative side where, cause you can drive an ATV or UTV on a paved road if you get the tag or whatever, if it's licensed. Which is another point, you actually need to have it, have the off-road tag, to go on the Forest Service roads. You have to have yep. both if you want to do those.
Yeah, so there's a couple different registrations. We have what we call a title plate. It's a non-street legal vehicle. You know, my kid's dirt bike is registered with a title plate, has to have an OHV decal because he's using it on public roads, Forest Service roads. As the street legal bikes and quads and side-by-sides, those you have to have ADOT equipment, ADOT tires, not blinkers, I'm sorry. We talked about that earlier and you got me thrown off.
Yeah, no blinkers. Yeah, my mom kept saying that. It's like, I don't think so.
No, you have to have...
Was it a horn?
A horn.
Tail, the light for the license plate?
Yep.
What else?
Is it brake lights?
The mirror, the rear view mirror?
Yeah. Am I missing anything else? Brake lights. Okay. You have to have all those things that you would need on the street.
Yeah.
But with a lot of those vehicles that are dual purpose, dual sports and such, you have to have not only the street legal plate to go on maintained roads, which some forest roads are maintained. You have to have the OHV decal. Cause again, if you're taking it on the dirt on the Forest Service roads, you have to have that decal.
Who sets the requirements? Is that the legislature? Is that ADOT or are you aware of that one? I'm just wondering because I think it's going to come a day where they're going to change. Arizona's pretty liberal laws as far as being allowed to drive these things on paved roads, on licensed
public
roads,
streets,
public
right?
streets. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. And these,
who sets that?
These laws are under Arizona Revised Statutes, okay. Title 28.
All right. So we'll ask our friends in the legislature, Rob, when we get them back on.
And all those folks out there that have side-by-sides and motorcycles that they ride off-road, let's comply with those rules, because the more we don't, the more areas are going to get shut down. I enjoy my side-by-side out there.
I know.
We've got to be responsible about
that's
this.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to lose that ability to drive on
it's
those.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Yeah.
So. You can download a map from the Coconino County Coconino National Forest, shows you all the roads you're allowed to be on. Don't go off-roading, you know, everywhere just because you can.
Yeah, and I hope they don't continue to close roads too. Though that's been a big issue.
Yeah,
on the national side. Okay, let's see. I want to get back to a couple more questions here before we run out of time. And we're with Aaron Brown, who's with Arizona Game and Fish Department, wildlife manager. Let's switch back to the a deer runs in front of you. I think when we were talking on the phone, I mentioned this. You hit a deer. You hit an elk. While you're driving, you see them all over the place. What do you do? What are you supposed to do?
Well, first off, I'm assuming there's damage to your vehicle.
Yeah,
you're going to want to file a police report because your insurance is going to want that. But you can obtain a salvage permit if you want. Any agency can give it out, county, city, Game and Fish. Any agency can give you that salvage permit if you want the animal. You can take it. We've actually recently changed those rules for the better. It used to be that you could either take it or gift it to someone while you were still there. Now, anyone, if I'm going down the road and I see if there's an animal that's recently been hit and I think I can salvage it, I can get a salvage permit for that.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, there's some stipulations. I have to read this little, when I'm giving you the salvage permit, I have to read this little thing that says something about...
If you get
this
worms,
looks pretty bad.
yeah, this meat's turning here.
Yeah. Right.
If there's eight crows on it, you're in trouble. But anyway.
Yeah, and we do have the discretion to say I'm not allowing you to take this because
it's been
obviously spoiled. But yeah, at this point, if an animal dies and is road hit or dies of natural causes, call us out. We'll issue you a salvage permit. If it's a vehicle, you're already going to be dealing with either Flag PD or county, and they can issue the salvage permit.
Yeah, I just figure an elk, that's causing serious damage. And
for
it's
sure.
like, if I can at least get that on the roof and throw it in the back of the truck once you call you guys, at least there's some...
I throw it on the hood because the hood's trashed already.
Oh, that thing is trashed, yeah.
I feel like there's some ethics there. We don't want to display it on the hood.
Okay, all right, yeah.
You do have to have that salvage permit if you want the animal because you have to have a reason. You have to have a permit to lawfully have that big game animal.
Okay.
Without a tag.
Yep, and that becomes your tag.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Okay. Another one here. I hear that the lakes have been very well stocked. In particular, Lower Lake Mary. I don't know if you, well, you're down in 6A, so you go down to the Verde and Clear Creek. What is the process? How often are these places stocked? Any information on that? Because my son Owen and I are always looking for some good trout.
Okay. Well, I'd give you a big long web address, but instead I'll just tell you, go to the Game and Fish website. Under the fishing tab, there's a where to fish, okay. And then there's a stocking schedule on there. That'll kind of give you an idea. As the season's just now getting started, we've got fish and we have lakes that we can't get to at this point, so we're just putting them where we can. Lake Mary's got 68,000, Lower Lake has 68,000 fish in it.
Everybody in Flagstaff can have a fish.
Before the levee broke.
Yeah, are they still there?
They are. So the interesting thing about the levee, that levee actually, even if it hadn't broken, a couple days later, we went over the top of it water.
That's true.
So, yeah. And that levee was there for basically to keep the water out of some sinkholes that existed there in the past. So really all that's done is we've gained another 35 acres of surface area in the historic lake bed.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, that's good, man. Hopefully it was awesome to see Lower Lake Mary. Bob Thorpe lives out in that area. Yeah. He swears that it had filled quite a few years ago. I haven't seen it full like that for as far back as I can remember though. Sorry, Bob. I think you're misremembering. We're going to call you out on that.
We actually went out there specifically just to see it.
Yeah.
It's so impressive.
If you have extra trout, you're trying to find places to put it. Do you know where the West Clear Creek campground is?
I do.
Is that where do you guys stock that? Again, totally selfish here.
So we, the fisheries folks, they have different areas that they hit, and I don't know those areas, but
right. That'd be a good spot.
Usually has to be accessible by truck.
Yeah.
We do have some fisheries folks that will go in and stock areas by bucket.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
That'd be a good spot. That'll flow right back to the backyard.
So anyway. I'll make sure they know that.
No, we love fishing, and I think it's so good for the kids and for people. Just hunting and fishing is so important because where does food come from? Where does it, what does it take?
Understanding that.
Yeah. Yep. What does it take to gut a fish, fillet a fish, or process an animal, big game? People, you know, it's all different when it comes in a nice shiny package in the store versus, hey, this is where it really comes from. This is how it happens. So, yep. All right, Aaron, any final things here that you want to hit on as far as things people should know out there?
Or what could they do to help you?
Yeah, what
make
what
your job easier.
Exactly. I mean, imagine you have a huge area. All of you have a huge area and a lot to cover and a lot of people calling on you.
Yeah. One of the things I think we always ask of folks is you are the eyes and ears out there. There's not enough of us. If you see things, if you see something that's not right, call us. Obviously, don't get into conflicts. There's been a lot of hunter conflicts lately.
Mm.
Be the bigger person. Step out. Keep yourself safe. But if you can get us information on what's going on, we really appreciate that. We have our Operation Game Thief line. The phone number, if you're out hunting, the phone number's on your tag.
Be a good witness.
Yeah, don't take it into your own. There's such tensions nowadays everywhere. Yeah. So it's like, and especially if you're talking about people armed, Rob. We've talked about that, you know. So
don't pick on us.
Yeah. Not as big. Yeah. Okay. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of good info. And yeah. I'll probably have you back. I misspoke the other day on the show. I was like, we're going to do this every month, I said. And I was like, I took it back. I was like, I'm going to try to get someone on at least every quarter to share what's going on
seasons,
out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As we get into the season. So I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Aaron.
Thank you.
You know, it's a great time of year to head on out to Williams, wherever you're at in northern Arizona. Cool Williams, Route 6. When you think of Williams, you think of Route 66. You think of a classic Western town. They've been able to keep that alive there in Williams, Arizona. Go on out there and have a good time. Walk around, maybe zip on down that zip line and other great attractions in Williams. But then go to Miss Kitty Steakhouse right there on Route 66. Get a great steak. They've got great menu items with chicken, with fish. I love going to Miss Kitty's Steakhouse when I get on out to Williams, and it's well worth a drive and a good evening out there. Like I said, in a great classic old Western town right there on Route 66. Stop on by Miss Kitty's Steakhouse, get a great meal. Also, if you go out there and maybe going in the morning, maybe you got a lot of activities you want to hit on out there in the Williams area. They've got breakfast that's serving from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. All throughout the week, every day of the week. So stop by Miss Kitty's Steakhouse right there on Route 66. Miss Kitty's Steakhouse. Call for a reservation for some of those busy weekend nights, 928-433-5889. You also check out their full menu at MissKitty'sSteakhouse.com. That's MissKitty'sSteakhouse.com. Hang tight. Back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
I've worked with Desert Gold Exchange because I know they keep their overhead low, and I know they pass those savings on to you, so that way they can deliver more gold and silver directly to your door than just about anywhere else. Justin and his family-owned Desert Gold Exchange, they trade exclusively in physical, tangible metals, a commodity that can't be erased or hacked, which is really important nowadays. Now, when you call Desert Gold Exchange, by the way, mention the Jeff Orbit Show. They're going to help you understand pricing and the difference between various coins and actual bullion. Call Desert Gold Exchange. Like I said, mention the Jeff Orbit Show. Get a free investor's kit, 888-852-4343. Call them up. Learn how to get more physical gold and silver for your investment, 888-852-4343. That's Desert Gold Exchange, 888-852-4343. All right, remember, I've got an all-new show lined up for you tomorrow and throughout the rest of the week. Remember, I'm off on vacation, but I'll be back soon. And you can send me your email comments. We'll put them on a big pile, and Olivia will sort through those when we get back. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. But like I said, I've got all new shows all week for you. We worked really hard to bring you these. Make sure you get a full week of content here. Hope you all have a great, safe night. Take care. See you soon.
This is the Jeff Orbit Show.
Call Diamond Auto Glass first before making an auto glass claim. Now, here's why. Most insurance companies, they use a nationwide glass shop to answer their calls, and they're going to try to route you to their shop, which may very well delay the time it takes to replace your glass. Now, when you get a rock chip in your windshield, stop on by Diamond Auto Glass as soon as possible. Repairing a chip will stop it from spreading, and it'll save you from a costly windshield replacement. If you've replaced your windshield with Diamond Auto Glass before, as I have, you have a lifetime chip repair warranty and no appointments necessary. Just stop on in. Most chip repairs take 10 to 15 minutes. Remember, always call Diamond Auto Glass first, 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com.